Welcome to Aligned. I'm Sean Doyle, your host of Aligned, the podcast for executives of emerging middle market companies. We are here today with Taylor Robinson, fortunately a friend and in many cases a coworker when we get to work on projects together. Taylor is the CEO of 6 Foot Five. He also is an executive and founder of Arc Stories. And finally, he is launching a new thing. I don't know if he's ready to say it.
We could say it.
Fly Kid?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to talk through what each of those businesses are and have a good visit today focused on storytelling. So Taylor, welcome.
Thank you. It is a pleasure. I'm excited to be here. It's a beautiful morning.
We're doing something new. We're sitting outside. So yeah, you're here, my neighbor's dog, which if y'all could figure out how to get it to quit barking, it would be great. If you hear some birds and who knows, this is an experiment. As Taylor often says when we're working together, this is probably a terrible idea.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea.
We'll see. If you're listening as you're driving down the road and you hear a bird, it's actually not in the back of your car. It's here in my front yard. Taylor, the executives that are listening are people who are trying to improve their sales or marketing or communications in some manner. It could even be internal communications. We've worked together on commercial projects. We've worked together on nonprofit work. We've worked together on internal communication programs. Yeah. So I think as we talk about storytelling, keep that in mind. Everybody wants to have a practical takeaway. So I hope today's conversation can be a mixture of ideas and maybe even strategic or philosophical, so people can execute these things ongoing with this help, but also maybe just one or two simple, really practical tips. But let's start by, tell us about you.
Okay, so I make a living as a commercial film director. 6 Foot Five does a lot of commercial work. We do a lot of work with you, where clients come to us with problems that they're trying to solve with either video or film or some kind of video problem, and we tell them what our best ideas are, and then we go and execute. So we make TV commercials, we make online videos, we make HR videos, industrial videos. But the thing that we're the best at, that I think we sell ourselves the best at, and that we are the best at, is just good old-fashioned storytelling. So if you have a thing that you're trying to sell, I believe the best way to sell it is to tell a story about it. And it really doesn't matter what the thing is, because a story works no matter what. And so you asked me to tell about me. So that's what I do as a video film director.
I was going
to
say, that's not who you are. That's what you do.
That's right.
But who are you? I mean, I know you as a 6 foot five, hence the name of the company, Texan with a big handlebar mustache.
That's right.
I'm a 6 foot tall guy. I hate standing next to you. It's horrible. But tell me about you.
Okay.
Who are you?
I got this. I can do this better. So I'm the son of a Texas high school defensive line football coach who is exactly what you expect. My mother was a home economics teacher, and my mother and my grandmother, in the midst of a huge influence to do competitive things in sports and whatnot, my grandmother and my mother fought really hard to do what they call give me culture. And so as a little kid, I grew up straddling competitive athletics and my father, and also being in the high school musical and learning how to play music and being in the church choir and all of those things. And so I can sit down with anybody and talk about football and understand the difference between the different kinds of offenses or the different kinds of backfield. But I can also sit down and talk about music and all of those things.
So Friday Night Lights, talking Smash Mouth, you know how to hit somebody. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I know in theory how to do it. I am also tall. I'm not as strong as I might appear. So my back is not so good. So if I were to play in a football game, I'd probably break in half.
Well, I'll say I know you also as an incredibly kind guy.
No, that's
so
nice.
Maybe Smash Mouth football.
That's right.
Well, so I think it's interesting what you're saying. It actually points to something that I've been thinking about. Make a good question for you. So marketing, sales and marketing, but I'll say marketing specifically, in this case, filmmaking and storytelling. When I say filmmaking, by the way, video, shooting video.
Sure. It's such
just a broad term. But so story, filmmaking sounds so fancy. So marketing as an art, It's interesting because it's not art that looks like a painting where I do it alone and then you participate in it some other time, or I write a piece of music and then you listen to it driving down the road, or, you know, it's a conversation. Storytelling is a conversation that's happening. So if it's film or if it's a live story, I mean, I'm interacting. The audience is participating in a story, I think, in ways other than traditional art might. So interestingly enough, I think your background, whether it's competitive athletics or being in a play, love of music, it all kind of ties into this art form, this participative art form. So right now, all the executives are going, oh gosh, this got really wonky. So, but help me understand, if you're an executive, how do you understand this art thing, this storytelling as an art?
Well, so I think that my definition of the word art is just any form of expression, right? So you take something that you want to communicate and you find a way to express it that isn't in many ways concrete, you know? So it can be painting, it can be writing, it can be the creation of video, it can be music, and you use the form of art. Well, you use art in all different forms. That's in marketing, that's in music, in expression. And so the answer to the question is, well, people are attracted to other people and companies' expression. And what I mean by that is, look at Facebook. Facebook has given everyone in the world the idea that your thoughts and your ideas and what's important to you are important. It's given everybody this heightened sense of expression. I can express myself. And so we're all drawn to that. And I believe the reason that we're drawn to that is because of storytelling. We like to hear stories. We like to tell stories. And so for executives out there who are thinking about, it sounds artsy-fartsy to talk about marketing as an art form or storytelling as an art form, but it's really not. My father is a football coach, and he's one of the best storytellers I've ever met. And there's not a person listening to this podcast who wouldn't love to sit down around a fireplace and listen to my dad tell stories about the farm, because he's just great at it. And that is an art form. He's great at it. You know, it doesn't have to be artsy-fartsy to be good art.
What is your favorite story that your dad tells?
Oh, that's great. So my dad is one of 8 brothers. So he grew up in a family on a cotton farm in West Texas, and he is one of 8 brothers. There were no sisters. It was all brothers. And of the 8, I think 5 of them went on to be high school football coaches. And I think those 5 also got to go to college for free because they played college. So it's a football family. So my dad has a lot of football stories and a lot of stories that kind of sit on the peripheral of football, fights, you know, this rival team and this rival team, the captains meet at Sonic and they have a fight, you know, 2 days before the game. But my favorite story that my dad tells is one from before he played football. When he was a little boy growing up on a farm, he tells a story about basically a 3 or 4 week war that he waged against the family rooster. And they had a chicken house. And his dad came to him, I think he was 7 or 8 years old. His dad came to him and said, Jerry, you're in charge of gathering the eggs, and walked him into the chicken house. And the rooster is not interested in people gathering the eggs of his hens. And so this rooster took offense to my father gathering the eggs. And so my dad was terrified of the rooster. And the story just goes on and on and on, where it ends in triumph, where my father is no longer bothered by the rooster, but it takes about 2 weeks and enormous amounts of terror on my father's part. It's a fantastic story.
That's great. So I think one thing that I think is important, if you're in business and you're thinking, how do I use a story? And storytelling applies to sales.
Oh, it, yeah.
You know, I think you're starting to see people in sales coaching world talk and teach salespeople how to tell a story. And you see it in good, let's call it good filmmaking or good TV production. And I think one difference in bad and good is this dialogue. So I think a good piece of work involves the viewer, and it's communicative both ways. It allows me as a viewer to participate in it. I understand it. I have empathy for it. I feel what's going on versus an inside out point of view, which I think is the critical mistake most businesses make, is I've got this thing. I want to tell about this thing, and I'm just going to tell you about this thing. Yeah. And it's kind of like bad preaching. It's like, right, it's motivated from self. It's right. Just one way. I really don't want your opinion. I don't want you to participate. I don't build in ways for you to participate. And in fact, one of my coworkers says, when people talk to themselves, we call them crazy. But when businesses talk to themselves, they call it marketing.
And, that's good.
You know, and there's some truth to that. So tell me about storytelling. And even though there's one person on stage with a mic or in front of the camera, what are the techniques? What are ways that storytelling allows a viewer to be a participant, not just a viewer or a listener?
So the best thing about good storytelling, maybe, and is that true? Yeah. Is that story, a story's greatest strength is in how relatable it is to the audience. So for example, my favorite movie is Jaws. I've never been attacked by a shark. I've never been bitten by a shark. However, I know what it's like to be really, really scared. And great storytelling takes the audience into account and it tells them a story that they in some ways can see themselves in, or that they can understand what's going on for the characters involved. And so it's all about relatability. And when you talk about companies like to talk about themselves, I think oftentimes this is true whenever I coach people to do an arc stories, or even whenever I sit down with a new client who wants to make a video, oftentimes the hardest hurdle to get over at the beginning of a creative process is this person who wants to tell a story doesn't actually know what their story is about. Hmm. And they think we should tell the story about this or this or this. And that's not a story. That's just, that's you recounting the history of your company, or that's you with arc stories, you can't get out of your way. And so what's really important is for companies who find themselves talking about themselves all the time is to stop, look at what you have, back out and look at your company or your product or your business or your service through the eyes of your customer and say, what's the story they want to hear? What's a story that they will relate to the most that just happens to have my company or my product or my service involved?
Love it.
And a lot of times, that's when you can begin to see a story for what it should be in a marketing sense. And that's also where good videos and good websites and good just sales calls over the phone or over dinner, they go from being bullet lists of, let me tell you a little bit about this thing that we do. We do XYZ ABC, and that'll help you XYZ ABC, which is just a list. That's not storytelling. That's you just, you know, talking about yourself. We say, hey, let me tell you a story about this customer that we had and the problems that we solved for them. And that's true across the board, even if you're not trying to sell something. Great storytellers, they can read an audience quickly, whether that be around a campfire or it be a film that releases on 150, that releases on 1,200 theaters nationwide. Storytellers, they take the audience into account and they help them carry.
So our natural propensity as humans is we do tend to, and you've got small children, you're teaching these children as they grow that the world is not about them, right? If they become grown adults and they still think they're the center of the world, they're not going to be great adults, right?
No.
So businesses that then think they're the center of the conversation become just as horrible.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so if you think about commerce as the act of somebody inviting you into their story because you can help them achieve what they want to do. And that could be anything. It could be big business to business stuff. It could be consumer stuff with the nonprofit work that we've done together.
Yep.
It's giving a way to allow me to understand. In fact, one of the great stories, I think, of our careers, at least of mine, Taylor, I was thinking about, as you shared that, I was thinking about one of our experiences with a client where we for years shot film of the CEO teaching and instructing, and the advice was sound and it was helpful and the CEO is respected for it in that space. And then the new CEO for the same company came in and said, let's tell the story. Let's allow the viewers to understand not the how to do it right, but the opposite side of the story. And they allowed us to tell a story that had an arc to it. Yeah. And we saw the bad when it wasn't done right, and when you didn't follow the advice, and when you didn't do the right things. And we saw the good and the viewership, the viewers of that film were allowed to participate in the story instead of being the recipient of advice. It's like being told what to do versus being brought to know and see. And so talk to me about that shift, that participation. And okay, let's say we're manufacturing something. How do I change from doing a story about the thing I manufacture and telling you about it to allowing me to participate in it? And I realize this is a principle. The application has to be specific to everybody's stories, but how do you make that shift? How do you stare at a white sheet of paper and figure out how to pivot the story to somebody else's point of view, where then I can be interested and engaged? Because now it's about me. It's not about you.
That's right. So what I would say, boy, it's a long, complicated answer. But what I would say is to start with two things. And this is probably something you say to your clients all the time. Like, what are you hoping to accomplish? What do we want? Do we want people to be better
at whatever?
And are we going to teach them how to do that? Or do we want them to buy this thing? And those are two very different things. So start with what you want to accomplish. And then right after that, you got to think about it from the customer or the target audience's point of view. What is the information or story, or to use filmmaking terms, what's the sequence that they need to go through in order to accomplish the thing that I want to accomplish?
So as you know, in our philosophy or our trans-theoretical model of behavioral change, we teach people that you've got to start with, the science teaches that you've got to start with recognizing yourself, recognizing the need to pay attention. So you've got to be engaged at the beginning of this story as we go through the beginning. How do you do that? How do you start a story off?
Okay. In the simplest terms, the best way to get a story going or to make the audience grab a hold of the story is, you know, they have different terms for it, but it's called the hook. You want to hook the audience with something. So there's a screenwriter, I forgot what his name is, but he wrote a book called Save the Cat. And it's basically a book about the formula for writing the perfect screenplay that you can sell in Hollywood. And it's so detailed to the point of, he says, on page 7 of your screenplay, something like this needs to happen. And to go back to your question, the answer is you've got to quickly set up one of your fundamental structural, story structure elements, and that is the problem, right? So in story structure, there's a lot of different terminology, and I break story structure down into four parts. You got a problem, you got a character, you've got the solution, and a place, right? And so in order to hook the audience, you've got to set the problem in front of them quickly, right? And so that's
as a member of the audience, I need to see myself in that problem, right?
That's right.
Or can it be a problem that I'm totally not involved? Because you see film, hey, I'm an astronaut and I'm stuck on Mars.
That's right.
That's not reality.
There are things about that that you do relate to, that you can relate to. So if it's a story where a guy is stuck on Mars, I don't know what it's like to be stuck in a spaceship on the surface of Mars. But I do know what it's like to be really, really scared and to not know what's going to happen. And so the great storytellers, whatever that Matt Damon movie is where he's stuck on the surface of Mars, the storytellers, they don't lean into what is it like to be stuck on the surface of Mars. They lean into what is it like to not know what's going to happen and to have to solve these problems in order to save my life. Because those are the things that everyone can relate to. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how to create water out of sunlight on the surface of Mars and grow plants, but I do know what it's like to be desperate. And so they lean into desperate and they let the science stuff just be a part of the problem that he's solving and he's desperate to save his own life.
So if I'm a manufacturer or a service provider, what I just heard you say is what I do, what I'm selling is like the science. It's actually a secondary part
Correct.
Of the story.
That's right.
So if I'm going to do a video that's really powerful,
that's right.
my product and service is actually not the star.
That's right.
The star is you, the viewer.
That's right.
And the problem being solved. So it's really not even about me.
That's
my
right.
company, my service, my product, what I'd make is the secondary player, right?
Yeah, that's right. So
that sounds terrifying.
If you were to ask, so when we teach storytelling and when we do things, there's a list of probably 10 secret ingredients to making a story really, really good. And if you were to put me on the spot and say, what's the most important secret ingredient for storytelling? I would tell you stakes, right? And I promise I'm about
like
to answer
rib eyes.
No, not that. Stakes. Like, what is at stake? What does the main character of the story stand to gain or lose? Is his life on the line? Is the whole is all of humanity on the line? Is his marriage on the line? What's at stake in the story, right? And so with storytelling, if you're trying to sell, let's make something super complicated that is way over complicated. I had a client call me one time. They make an iPad app that has a little dongle connector thing that you plug into it that you put poop from a chicken farm. You put the poop from the chickens into the deal. The deal chews it up and like analyzes it. And then the app analyzes the diet of the chickens. It's like incredibly complicated, right? But how do you tell a story about that product that makes it in some ways interesting and a story that people, okay, who's your audience? Other people who have chicken farms. And then what is at stake, right? So when I say stakes are most important, the reason I believe stakes are most important is because stakes go hand in hand with the problem. Mm. If you've got a story that has no problem, you actually don't have a story. Mm-hmm. You've got a list of features or something like that.
Right, which is why those features and benefits advertising, that stuff is boring.
Yeah, and it may have worked before, but it doesn't anymore because people, they sift through the BS and everybody's got the greatest thing that's ever happened, right?
Mm-hmm. Or at least made the claim.
That's right, right. So stakes and the problem, they go hand in hand. And so with this chicken app, this chicken poop app, the problem is, you got a bunch of guys who are raising thousands and thousands of chickens who need to analyze the poop of the chickens. And I can only imagine, I don't know a lot about it, but the process is very complicated. It's obviously very filthy. And so that's your problem. Let's solve that problem. And so these people created a product that is a solution to the problem. Like products, people, inanimate objects, like products that someone might sell, Snickers bars, poop apps, oil derricks, trees, like inanimate objects don't have problems. Right. Humans have problems.
That's why we all love those ads about the grumpy, you know, person that eats the Snickers.
That's right.
It's really not about the candy bar.
Or what it tastes like.
Yeah. It's about you.
You're grumpy.
You're a human. You're a better human being.
That's right.
And it solves this grumpy, tired, hungry problem.
Right. And humans are what have problems. And stories hinge on problems and what's at stake in the story.
Okay. So if you're an executive listening to the Taylor, correct me if I'm wrong. If you're an executive, what I'm hearing you say is the executive has to have the guts to do a video or to listen to you or some expert come in and say, here's the way we're going to tell this story. And as an executive, I can't say, but my product's not the star.
Yeah.
My product's not the hero.
That is exactly what I'm saying. And because it is a fundamental issue in there is that products, things, whatever you're trying to sell is only a solution to a problem. Stories revolve around problems, not around products, right?
Right.
And so stories are the most effective way to communicate anything. And stories are human things. They happen like to humans.
So I'm always looking for a lever as an executive, as a business person. I'm looking for a way to take advantage or get advantage over my competitor.
Correct.
So if they're doing features and benefits videos or not even doing videos at all, this is an opportunity
Absolutely.
To tell stories about people. Now, That said, what do I do if I see my competitors also telling people stories? Testimonials are a really popular thing. You see a lot of testimonial video. So how do I make my testimonial video, my story, better?
That's a great question.
Or is it a matter of varying degrees?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is secret sauce stuff right here. Like, this answer is secret sauce. So in storytelling, one of the general rules that all storytellers will tell you is the good can only be as good as the bad is bad.
Oh.
So that's why all the greatest hero movies have a great villain, right? So if you're just doing a testimonial where you got this guy standing up in front
of a wall. 6 foot five's great. Taylor's great. You're going to love working with Taylor. Everything they do is beautiful.
That's right.
That's a boring testimonial.
It's a boring testimonial. It may say everything I want it to say, but in great storytelling, the bad has to be bad.
But here's a true testimonial. I had hired another director to do a piece for me for a nonprofit.
Yep.
And it was falling apart, and I couldn't get the direction going the way it should, and the production qualities were going, and I had to fire somebody, and I was introduced to Taylor.
Yep.
And then Taylor came in and produced a piece that ended up actually sharing this nonprofit story all around the world.
Yeah.
True. And this is a true story.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a much more interesting story than Taylor's great.
That's right. So, you know, I sum up storytelling so many times already, but storytelling is about before and after.
Mm.
And in before and after, you find problems and solutions. And in before and after, you find bad and good, right? And so a great testimonial from somebody doesn't have to be complicated and cost you $100 million to shoot. It can just be shot with your iPhone, but fight for, in the testimonial, the bad to be bad and the good to be good. Not just, let's talk about the good things. No, we had this problem, and that's where the bad is. And now this is where, and this product or this service was my solution. And the bad is what makes the good as it can be.
We did some work for a law firm a jillion years ago, and they were incredibly powerful. The law firm actually saw 35% per partner per share growth over the years these ads ran. And what was interesting about the ads was it featured executives talking about what they saw going on in the economy and around them and how other executives might follow that advice or see those observations and glean from it. And then the very, very, just the tagline was, this story was brought to you by the law firm. And it was an aha moment. First of all, it was astonishing that it got approved, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted the law firm to be the hero.
Sure.
Well, what those testimonials did, really, it was not a testimonial about the law firm directly, but indirectly, these powerful, smart executives were saying, by the way, they're my law firm. We work together. And that endorsement was powerful. So I think endorsement still makes sense.
Absolutely.
But if it's this direct nose-on endorsement, I tune it out because I know the outcome of the story.
Crummy commercial.
It's like a bad, yeah, it's like a bad movie or a bad story, you know, I mean.
It's like in the Christmas story, he drink more Ovaltine. That's what I waited for. It's a crummy commercial. No, thank you.
Right. Okay, Taylor, Hallmark movies.
Okay.
I know how the Hallmark movie is going to work.
Yep.
But I keep watching them. Why?
You don't keep watching them. No, the reason is because you love to be told a great story. Well, you love
arc.
To be told, you love to follow
arc.
Stories.
Everybody who's ever watched a Hallmark, well,
here's the answer.
Everybody who's ever watched two Hallmark movies knows the pattern.
I was having a hard time coming to it. Here's the answer. As a storyteller, I say this all the time, your greatest tool is the fact that the audience, no matter where you are, the audience always wants to know what happens next more than anything. They want to know that more than they want to know anything else. And so with Hallmark movies, you may know exactly how the movie's going to end. Yeah, they're going to get back together and it's all going to work out fine. But you don't know how they're going to get back together. And you want to know what happens next. And
so it's not about the end. It's about the journey.
It is. Boy, isn't that true? It is not about the end. It's about the journey. And so with that storytelling, I feel like in some ways, storytelling is cheating. And by that, I mean, it's not complicated and it's ancient. Like, we've been telling stories to each other for a really long time as humans. Some would say since we could communicate. And the rules and the fundamentals of telling great stories, it's very simple. And they haven't changed or evolved or become more complicated as we've gotten more scientific as a society. Like,
right.
It's the same as it was whenever we were banging rocks together. And that is proof that what you were saying, everybody wants to know what happens next in the story. Even if it's a terrible story, you still, in some ways, want in the back of your mind to go, well, I wonder how he's going to convince her
right,
that he's not a horrible person. You know?
I know they're going to have conflict, and I know it's going to resolve. Now I just get to sit back.
That's right.
And then, so it doesn't have to, good filmmaking doesn't have to be surprising all the way through.
No. Nope.
But it has to have that arc. I have to see that journey. So hugely popular is the story brand model from Donald Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that a story has 7 steps. A character, you've said that, right?
Yeah.
A problem, you just said that. They meet a guide.
This is the arc. This is his arc, yeah.
This is his arc. You have an opinion on this idea of guides?
No, Donald Miller's 7 steps is very, it's a very, very common arc, story arc. In fact, you probably learned it in 8th grade literature. You probably learned some form of it in 8th grade literature.
He's done a great job of marketing.
Changing the words. And right. Then marketing and repackaging it. But Donald Miller's 7 steps are, they have to do with the sales process, right? So like he wrote his 7 steps for people to use as a marketing tool. And perfect. So the meeting of the guide, that is the perfect blank for you to enter your guy or your product or your service. What Donald Miller created, and he has people spending buckets of money to go spend, like $10,000 to spend the weekend with him. It's nothing new.
But it works.
But it works. And also, and it doesn't work because he rewrote it. It works because he's teaching it in a way that people are willing to, he's teaching ancient truths in a way that people are willing to spend money on in a modern day. Good for him.
Yeah. And I would take the position of, so you've got this character, a problem, a guide, there's a plan. There's a call to action that helps them avoid failure, and there's success. So I would say that my differentiation, and he's the one making millions of dollars, not me, so maybe you should listen to him. But the idea of a character who has a problem that ends up avoiding failure and ends up in success, that is the same arc we talked about as an astronaut on Mars or anything that we've ever shot. I think the differentiator here is meets the guide, has the plan, calls them to action. I think the propensity for business to insert themselves as the hero there and overdo it, drum it out of people. I believe people, there's this Broca-Wernicke conflict, and it's the two parts of your brain that assemble and form words and put images and words together. And there's a predictive ability that those two parts of your brain have. If I'm watching a story and then I see the spokesman step in as the hero holding the brand product and I turn off.
That's right.
You lose me.
That's right.
So I think the danger of this format is too much weight on this hero guide idea. It can be too much of a blunt object.
Yeah.
So how do you do? So now we're talking about, if my supposition is correct, we're talking about varying degrees. What do you recommend? You're the expert.
Okay.
You recommend that the viewer will figure out that who the guide was, and that gives them a way to participate? Or do you need to be, right, this is commerce, and we've got 30 seconds to do this?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I believe, I listened to Donald Miller's book, and I believe that he would say, your customer is the hero of the story. And if your product or your service ever becomes the hero of the story, you're not telling a story anymore, or you're not telling the right story. And so that's my advice to all executives who ever need to do make a marketing message, and they choose, we want to tell a story well, and that be our marketing message.
Yep. So Clarence the Angel and It's a Wonderful Life is the guide.
That's
he
right.
had the plan, and
that's
he
right.
called Jimmy Stewart's character,
right.
George Bailey, to an action.
That's right.
But we never were once asked as a viewer of that. Clarence wasn't selling me anything.
That's
so
right.
I trusted him.
That's right. And I would go so far to say that within marketing, like, you are the solution. You are not the hero, ever. You're never the hero. You can't be the hero. Your audience, the person who is in the shoes of your target audience, they have to be the hero. And if you don't do that, you're telling the wrong story. Like you're telling the wrong story.
I had a new business prospect who was in the financial services space, and he was ready to hire us to work for him. And then he got a hold of the Story Brand conference retreat. And then I think what I'm hearing you say is he executed it wrong because he was the hero.
That's right.
At the end of the day, my clients are wealthy and they can retire successfully. And look what I did for you. And that's when I got bored and moved away.
Sure.
It should have been the client made the right choices and saw and did and look at the result of the client. The client's the hero.
You get to be. Your customer is the hero, and you have to tell a story that shows one of your customers as the hero of the story that solved the problems, and they just happen to have solved their problems using whatever it is you got to sell.
So one practical application is the hero. The client, the customer, the end user is always the hero. Another practical application I'm hearing is you've got to have an arc. You've got to present the problem. You've got to tell the bad. You and I once tried to work for a person actually to shoot a film, but we were told explicitly that we could not have the main character ever have a problem.
No flaws, no issues.
They had to start off perfect and end perfect. And we declined the opportunity to do it because there's
a huge mistake.
It was a great story.
It's a killer story. But if there's nothing at stake for your hero, you got a bad hero.
Yeah, that's incredible. So heroes aside, what about this idea of truth-telling? And tell me, as a producer and helping clients tell or show a video, I spend a lot of money putting water on the driveway so the driveway is blacker and prettier and having the grass mown right before you shoot and then bringing in pretty talent, beautiful cast, maybe even secondary characters or background characters. Y'all bring in big trucks and people with years of experience. But we're living also in a time where I pick up my phone and I produce, quote, real video, but it's horribly unattractive.
Sure.
And it's hard to watch. Help me understand truth-telling. What is appropriate to present the pretty, the beautiful? Because you can make anything look beautiful.
Almost.
And I think part of the answer is, well, why would I just asked you the question. Why am I answering it? How do you answer that? Does he understand that balance? I mean,
you're talking about production value.
Yeah. Production value is the fancy word that you would use in the industry.
Right. So it's more of an aesthetic thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's as much aesthetic as it is anything else.
Coming back to marketing as art.
People, your customers, your target audience, they are overwhelmed with marketing messages and images and pictures and movies and films and blah, blah, blah. You don't need me to talk about how many messages there are. And some of it looks good and some of it is done well and some of it isn't. And now more than ever, people are able to kind of determine, like they pass judgment on everything. I like the way that looks or I don't like the way that this looks. And if you create something that doesn't have what I would call high production value, you run the risk of alienating some people who have, like, that's a really important criteria. Oh, well, that looks like a janky. They don't know what they're doing because they won't even spend money on this promo video.
Right.
And, or you've got places where you're like, well, I can't think of a scenario where great production value would be bad. There's just no scenario where it looking really good is a bad thing.
What about those long format commercials where the guy paints the glue on the screen door and then rides around the boat in the lake?
I would say
bad production values, or would you say that actually is good?
I would say that from a production value standpoint, it looks good. You can go too far and make it look like a soap opera, which then now we're talking about what you were talking about earlier. It's not true. It's not real. That's not what my life is like. And so people now more than ever can kind of say that ain't real.
Right.
That would never happen. That's a studio audience. Those people look like a bunch of idiots. No one would cheer for that. Well, that's also true. You've gone too far. Now you've just canned it all. And so it's about
the production value is what I'm hearing is actually about having enough quality so that it's aesthetically pleasing. And we do as humans have an aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
And it looks true and it is true.
Right.
but it's not so far beyond that I've now lost trust.
That's right.
I can overproduce something.
Well, people just are, they have the BS meter. Like, I can tell when something's real or not.
Yeah.
And that's why whenever you watch a movie that's got a bad actor in it, you can't think about anything else except for how bad this guy is.
Right.
And you probably couldn't sit down and write a thesis on why he's so bad, but you know he's bad. And the same is true for 30-second commercials or infomercials. Like, if I don't believe you, it doesn't matter what it looks like. And so production value, only making things look really, really good, in some ways is just an attempt to get rid of all the distractions so that we can cut to the heart of the issue or the conversation and say, this is what's true and this is real. And you try to make things look beautiful so that it's just more pleasing. And I don't want to bail out and stop watching this story because I can't hear what the guy's saying because there's trucks in the background. You know what I mean?
Like the podcast? Yeah, great. Should there be an alignment of production value to the product or service that you're selling? In other words, and I think it's a catchy, I don't know the answer to this, because Coca-Cola sells a 50-cent product that has multi-million dollar production values. Shit. Then again, you look at some of the big commercial work we do that's $100,000 capital expenditures for the B2B clients, and the tendency is to have really bad production values. Sure. So is there an easy rule of thumb to align? How do you know when it's okay to call your niece or nephew with their iPhone and in kind of this democratization of equipment, you know, we're sitting on my patio with a laptop and two mics, and I've got minimal amount of course, we're listening to birds, and it's not a production studio, but is it good enough for a podcast? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it is good enough.
How do you navigate that? Because you're a purveyor of people who really understand high quality communications.
I think it's a really good question. I think the pendulum swings hard. But like almost all things in life, the answer is found somewhere in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. And you may not need to spend $2 million on a TV commercial for your very, very small company. You don't. You don't need to. You can't. You won't. But Coca-Cola does need to because they have a brand awareness that is global that the audience expects that kind of quality. And so the answer is, I believe that the answer is different for every single problem. So if you come to me, one of the things that we are really, really good at is you come to me and you say, hey, well, our budget, what we can afford to spend is this. What we're really good at is saying, okay, well, the best thing you can get for that amount of money is this idea. And that's where taste comes in, our taste, right? So if you've only got $20 to spend on this video, there are always budget restraints, always. But the thing to keep in mind when you're looking to create a message, especially when you're talking about making a film or a video, is that you want the highest possible production value that you can afford. And that has as much to do with who you hire to do it as it does to how much money you spend. And those two things go hand in hand. And what I mean by that is if you want your brand to appear to the general audience out there, especially your target audience, to be very valuable, whatever it is that you have, then the messages that you create for them, they also need to look very valuable. Like, we spent our money on this. And so whenever you pick a partner, a film director to make your commercial, I would say that the person you choose and the team you choose to help you accomplish your goals is just as important as how much money you're going to spend. Because we've all seen commercials that costed truckloads of money to make that aren't any good. And it's not an issue. That's not a budget issue. That's the people. That's an execution issue.
Yep. Yeah. So I think that makes sense. We can all buy equipment. Anybody can buy equipment.
All day.
That's easy, actually.
That's right.
If it's really expensive equipment, you can rent equipment. In fact, you rent equipment sometimes.
Tons of equipment.
That's fine.
My dad has a saying, it ain't the gear, it's the guy, right? And so throwing production value is you can only get the effect you want as much as the people that you partner with are capable of executing.
So I like the focus on people because I think that brings a great point to it. So there is an appropriate amount of money to spend. So there's two points here. The first point is your brand. So Coca-Cola, we talk about a 50-cent product, but a multi-million dollar TV production. But what Coca-Cola is selling is not 50 cents of sugar and water.
No, that's
right.
Not
it's so selling their brand.
Lifestyle.
It's who I am as a person. They're selling, to some extent, you might even say self-identity. So we talk about Coca-Cola selling a 50-cent product, but that's not what they're selling. They're selling lifestyle, the ideals of who they are.
Yeah.
And that even varies by brand, right?
That's
so Mountain Dew, if I remember, is that a Coca-Cola product or is that Pepsi?
Aren't they all Coca-Cola?
Doesn't matter. Yeah. If not, forgive us, Coca-Cola. But Mountain Dew has a very different attitude than Mellow Yellow, even though they both kind of look like yellowish, sugary, caffeine sort of drinks.
Yeah.
But I associate a skateboarder with one and Mellow Yellow. I don't even know
hippies.
What I do. Kind of hippie, laid back, you know. So, yeah, I mean, they're selling something different. And the way to get there is really good storytelling.
That's right.
And that's what they do. So the flip side of that then would be the people. The second point here is, well, the first point is you're selling your brand, your product, the association of that product. It's not all, and we talk about the value triad, it's not all about how your product can make you more money or solve your problem. Or it's part of it. I am buying some self-identity in the way the world approaches things, right? There's my car can get me from A to B.
Right.
Now, do I want to do it in Hyundai or Mercedes? They both get you from A to B.
Right.
It starts having to do with what I want, what I believe, how I feel, et cetera. So that's where storytelling comes in, differentiation and as a business tool, storytelling can be a lever to actually get more value or to draw more value from your marketplace.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And also to show it, to get more value, yes. But I believe what you mean by that is to show the value that your product or whatever has in the marketplace. Is that what you mean?
No, I really literally mean if your marketing and your storytelling is so powerful, so effective.
Oh, yeah. So
for example, Caterpillar versus Komatsu. I did a little study the other day. And Caterpillar versus Komatsu, you could buy almost identical pieces of equipment, same power, same lift, same number of, same amount of cylinders and capacities. And Caterpillar is going to charge you almost $80,000 to $90,000 more for the exact same specification in either product. Why? And in fact, the research actually showed, the Komatsu was actually cheaper to operate long term. So you think they could charge more.
Right.
And why? So why? Yeah, brand.
The brand. So,
right?
Yeah.
It's a Caterpillar. I can now go out and say, well, if I do the work for you, all my equipment's going to be Caterpillar. It's the best.
Yeah. And I would say, so like with executives who are out there, if you built a business or you're in charge of a business, and I can only assume that excellence in the thing that you do or the product that you sell is a very, very important aspect of the way you run your business. We have an excellent product. Our people treat our customers excellent. And I believe that the same should be true about your marketing messages. Our marketing message is excellent. It looks excellent. It's well thought out. It's done well. And it's just important to fight for that.
Well, and you and I have a financial services client that we worked on together that is a small regional entity.
Yep.
But they deliver and offer the same services as a competitor of theirs who's a Fortune 500 entity.
That's right.
And their marketing, their television looks as good, maybe even better.
Maybe even better.
Because the Fortune 500 stuff, to me, tends to look a little cut and paste, a little generic.
Super generic. You could play this anywhere in the world.
You could put any bank in the world could use those ads. Versus our client who really intelligently has invested in not those huge production value budgets because we had extra trucks and trailers and whatever. We've actually spent more money on the right talent. And by that, I mean the right director, the right editor, the right colorist.
Actors.
In the right roles.
That's right.
And spend the less money on things that are less important. So production values is really an investment in craft, not equipment.
That's right.
I think
that's
so.
That's right. And, you know, they say What is that common saying that if you've got a job, you should dress for the job that you want or whatever it is?
Right, not the one you have. Yeah.
Dress for the job you want, not the one that you have. And I believe that is true for marketing messages. Your marketing message should look, you should look like the brand that you aspire to be, not that you currently are.
Taylor, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about story arcs, techniques. We've talked about heroes. We've talked about anchors. Talked about a lot of things. What? Tell me, as we wrap up this segment, tell me what's the thing I didn't ask you? Again, thinking about this executive who's made it through to the end of this podcast, and they're going, gosh, I need one little bit of gold.
The one thing that you do, so if I think back on our conversation, the most important thing that everyone needs to understand is that stakes are the most, problems are so important. But if it's something that we haven't talked about, I would say this is something that my father used to always say, and I think we all say it because it's cute. Just don't overthink it. The art of storytelling, the craft of storytelling is very, very simple. It's incredibly simple. And if you understand just very, very simple things, you got to have a character, he's got to have a problem, it has to happen in some place, and there's a, with marketing videos, there has to be a solution that involves your product, right? So that's just basic story structure of marketing storytelling. Don't overthink it, because it's so easy to think, well, we've got to find a way to get the bullet list of features in of our product in this thing. No, it's not. Your audience is smart. They can connect the dots and they can fill in the blanks. And when you start adding all the gobbledygook that isn't storytelling to your stories, you're almost insulting your audience and saying, well, we don't think that you can connect these dots. Tell a story well and trust that your audience is smart enough to connect the dots because you made the spot.
I think that's insightful. And Taylor, you've said something. You can quote your father. I'm going to quote you.
Okay.
Filmmaking is simple.
It is.
It's not easy. But it's simple.
It is. And it's so, it is absolutely so true, because it's not like brain surgery. Brain surgery is very complicated and people get paid an enormous amount of money. But those guys in Hollywood who make more money than brain surgeons, they have figured out a way to package something that is very, very simple. They know how to do it. They've got great exposure. But the thing that they're doing at Pixar is very simple. They just know the rules and they don't deviate from the rules. And they've all got a great story about the time that they deviated from the rules and they made a mistake, or they fumbled, this story didn't work well because of XYZ and I fumbled this thing that was true. So yeah, it's simple, but it is not easy.
Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.
Taylor Robinson, where would I find you if I wanted to plug in and learn more about you at 6foot5.com.
6foot5.com is the production company, and ARC Stories, that's ARC like a story arc, ARC stories.com.
And what about this new entity?
Oh boy.
Let's get back together and we'll talk about that next.
Love it.
All right. Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.